What was it that brought you to the ER today?
It hurts. Yeah.
Hurts to talk?
Okay. Do you think you can open your eyes? Good.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time for C3. We're going to do HIV and AIDS. But before we start, a quick disclaimer. There is a number of different interviews on C3 this month, as there is every month. And in this case, we have a particularly sick patient. I want you to know specifically that every single patient gets consented to allow us to use their audio. And in every single case, they're more than happy. They're very excited about being part of the educational enterprise. So this particular patient who was quite ill was consented at the time and then consented again later, just to be sure. But we need you to know that so that there can be no misunderstanding. Okay? Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's C3, HIV/AIDS.
Do you have a headache?
Yeah. Okay.
Do you have neck pain?
Yeah.
How about your stomach? Does that hurt too?
Yeah, I don't want no more.
Do you have cough and shortness of breath?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. You coughing things up? Yeah. And what about fevers and chills? We're going to come back to this case. Actually, we're going to work through this case for much of this episode of C3. But Stuart, why don't we start by going over what the objectives are? What are we trying to cover in this episode of C3 on HIV and AIDS?
Well, obviously, HIV is an incredibly complicated topic, and neither of us can pretend that we're the world's experts on it. We're emergency doctors. And so we're obviously going to tailor the approach to what we would be encountering in the emergency department. And often that's actually a pretty tough situation because you don't even know the diagnosis. So we had to consider that. You got to figure a lot of these patients will have unknown CD4 counts, mm-hmm. and it will be hard to know where they're at in their disease, even when you know they have it. So in some ways, it's more challenging in the emergency department, this diagnosis. But on the other hand, Jess, some of the things that experts in the field might obsess about, like all of the details of each and every one of the drug regimens, I think we need to go a little bit easier on ourselves and realize.
I agree. You know, I agree.
It can't all be there in our mind. We have to have the ability to have some critical upfront knowledge about keeping these patients safe. But then we've got to totally recognize the need to go to that secondary tier and get help because it is complicated.
Yeah, I have to be honest here. When we decided to do this topic, it just kind of gave me a pit in my stomach. Like, this topic has always been such a struggle for me because I feel like the way that it's always been taught traditionally has been this rote memorization of CD4 counts and pathogens or the opportunistic infections that happen at that CD4 count. And then a memorization of the antimicrobial and then the side effects. And it always was so painful to go through that rote memorization that I wanted to avoid this. But that's why I think it's even more so important that we cover this and we make it more simple and more approachable than the way that it was traditionally taught.
All right. So now you've got me pumped. Let's take a stab at this and let's see if we can fulfill that goal.
Okay. We're going to go through this realistic approach without getting too bogged down in the CD4 count, but we are going to go through some of the really important opportunistic infections and other things that you need to know about the sick AIDS patient. We're going to do it in a systems-based approach and go through one system at a time. But we're also going to talk a little bit about the acute HIV infection in that phase. And then at the end, we'll talk about post-exposure prophylaxis, a common thing that we see in the ED.
So the full spectrum from the patient who's worried that they might have contracted HIV all the way up to the person who's morbidly ill.
Okay, let's start out by talking about, just briefly, what is HIV? Just really quickly, all right? We're not going to do the med school version of this, but it's human immunodeficiency virus. It attacks your T cells, and over time, it eventually causes immune system failure, and it leads to AIDS, acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. And it was described first in the 1980s, and now it's spread to pretty much everywhere in the world. Now there are about 35 million people with HIV alive right now, and there are over 2 million new diagnoses of HIV every year.
Jess, when I was considering going into med school, I had an uncle, a great uncle, who was one of the only docs in the family, and he said to me, you know, Stuart, I went into medicine at the best time, just when they discovered antibiotics.
Wow, that's cool.
And guess what? I also retired at just the right time with AIDS.
That's what
he said. Because when AIDS started, when we first started recognizing this was a totally different situation than it is in 2017 as mm-hmm. we record this. And in some ways, it's defined for those of us that are, you know, mid or mid to late career, it in many ways defines our careers in medicine. At the very beginning of my career, we had the beginning of the AIDS epidemic, and they were just identifying what the virus was and understanding how it was attacking the immune system. And we were witness to all these young men in our cities that were dying of this mysterious illness that was causing horrible infections that we hadn't seen in years or only seen in chemotherapy patients mm-hmm. and cancers that we didn't see in our other patients. And then when I got into general practice, we got the first drugs that were making a difference for these patients that were actually reconstituting their immune systems. Some of them were starting to live longer. And nowadays, the entire nature of HIV illness has changed from a fatal death sentence, basically, mm-hmm. to a chronic manageable disease, just mm-hmm. like diabetes or hypertension.
Right, with the right medications and healthcare access. I think right up front, we have to define the difference between HIV and AIDS. HIV is the infection, that's the virus. But then it becomes AIDS when either there's a CD4 count that's really low, as in below 200, or a patient who's HIV positive has an AIDS-defining illness. Now, there's a long list of AIDS-defining illnesses. You can look it up in Tintinalis or online, but we're going to go over most of these in this episode. We should also think about who is at risk for HIV and AIDS. Of course, men who have sex with men is the big risk category, as well as IV drug users, people who have risky sexual practices, or patients who have had blood transfusions before 1985. And then, of course, anyone who has a mother who has HIV, then there's a likelihood of vertical transmission by placenta.
So, what happens after you get infected with HIV? You're not going to know immediately. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to happen immediately. But sometime about 2, 3, 4 weeks after the time when you contract the virus, you have an illness that's kind of like mono. Mm-hmm. They get a fever. They're fatigued. They often have a sore throat, just like you get in mono. They can have a very nonspecific rash, maculopapular rash sometimes. They get a headache. They can have swollen lymph nodes, sore muscles. I mean, essentially, it's indistinguishable yes. from a viral syndrome.
Sounds like every virus ever.
But, you know, you may have a history preceding that of a high-risk exposure or a person that has a lot of risk factors in general. Mm-hmm. And some things might make it a little more specific for acute HIV. So in this first phase in the acute HIV syndrome, you have an enormous amount of activity in your immune system and an enormous number of RNA copies of the virus circulating in your bloodstream. And in that initial phase, there can be an initial profound drop in your immune function. So when you look at graphs of CD4 counts, and we all kind of know CD4 counts is basically the surrogate for how the immune system is doing, mm-hmm. you'll notice that patients in their initial conversion to HIV often dip really low in their CD4 counts at the very beginning before coming up into a long-term, stable, quiescent period. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people in that initial conversion to HIV in that first few weeks will come in with actual opportunistic infections. They'll have some yeast in their mouth. Sometimes they have cutaneous ulcers, things that are a little more suggestive, hey, maybe this is more than just a viral syndrome from a cold or from a flu.
So after that initial infection, it actually takes a few weeks for seroconversion. So if you run an HIV test in that acute infection, in the primary infection, it's going to be negative. I mean, you still want to do it because you don't know if they've had HIV for some time and now they're manifesting an opportunistic infection. But it's important to tell your patient that they need follow-up testing because it takes 3 to 8 weeks to mount an antibody response. Let's talk about how we do testing for HIV in the emergency department. Now, the way that we learned it in medical school was that the first test is the ELISA. And if that's positive, then you get a confirmatory test, which is the Western blot test. Now, we don't do that in the ER because we don't get quick enough turnaround time. We like things to happen fast. So we have the rapid HIV test. And the good news is that it gives us a turnaround of about 10 to 20 minutes. And it's about as good as the ELISA. So if it's positive, you still want to get a Western blot to confirm it. Now, if it's negative, this can be a little bit tricky, right, Stuart?
That's right, because it takes a while for people to seroconvert to HIV. So you might not have an antibody response for up to a couple of months or even more after your exposure. And so when you're confronted with a symptomatic patient, you want to try to see if there's anything you can do to make the diagnosis earlier. So in a lot of emergency departments, we're now using the antigen antibody test. And what that is, Jess, is that it's a combination of HIV-1 and HIV-2 antibodies. Okay, that's something that we're all familiar with. But in addition to that, it also checks for an earlier indicator called the P24 antigen. And you might pick that up several weeks after their infection. In fact, it could be as early as 10 to 20 days after their exposure.
And if that is negative, but you really are suspicious, is there a rule for getting a viral load?
And that's a really good question. Now, we don't recommend getting viral loads willy-nilly in the ER, especially on patients that are asymptomatic, because there can be false positives. But if you think the patient has an HIV conversion syndrome, and you think that that's what this acute illness is, it's appropriate to send a viral RNA load, because if that's positive, then you've made a very early diagnosis of HIV. And Jess, I really want to emphasize why it's so important to make that early diagnosis of HIV. And this is something that has really changed in the past few years, which is that at the point when they first convert, they have this extremely high burden of virus in their bloodstream, and they're very contagious. And we also think that that's the stage at which the body is being seeded. The whole body is being seeded by this virus, and it's really hard to get rid of it once it takes a foothold in your system. And so the modern thinking is that when we first identify that they are HIV, that they've got this virus, we try to kill it and we try to prevent the spread of it. And so that's a really big push in the past few years, is to identify and get these patients into treatment as soon as possible to decrease the load of virus that ends up being in their body and to decrease the transmission in that early stage.
And there was an article on this that was covered in EMA in November of 2016. It was abstract number 16. So let's take a quick listen to Billy Mallon talking about this article about the feasibility of empiric HIV treatment for patients with suspected acute HIV in the ED.
Because we know that in acute HIV infection, and the authors go through this, that after an eclipse phase, there's invasion of the local lymphoid tissue and then ramped up viremia, which is when they kind of get symptomatic and come in. And that these patients go on to have really high viral loads and do a lot of transmission of disease while they're in that stage. And so it's suspected that up to half of all cases are transmitted during acute HIV illness. And so if you could get these people started, you would really impact not only their final outcome by starting them on retrovirals early, but really you would be fighting the epidemic and its spread at really a key junction point.
You know, so much of the assessment in the emergency department has to do with determining what the state of immune compromise is of that patient.
Right.
And you can do that really in two ways, Jess. The first way, and the way that the internists like to do it, is with the CD4 count.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very, very helpful, because patients with CD4 counts, for example, below 200, we know are very immunocompromised, and 200 is a frequently quoted number.
Right.
It's not set in stone, but you know, below that's when really the bad things really start to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the other way to do that, Jess, is just to look at the patient and to take a good history and physical, because if they've had recent opportunistic infections, if they have wasting syndrome, that's obviously going to give you a pretty good idea just right there that they're immunocompromised.
Now, one thing that I've always wondered is, let's say you look in their chart, you look for their most recent CD4 count, and I find a number. Now, how recent does that CD4 count have to be for me to reliably say that they're in the same ballpark when I'm seeing them in the ED? I mean, if it's 6 months old, if it's 30 days old, if it's a year old, like, where do I draw the line?
You know, Jess, this is something that I've been asking my HIV consultants for years, and I've never gotten an exact answer and an exact number on it. But CD4 counts in general don't change rapidly from day to day. Like, I know, for example, that when you convert to HIV and there's that latent period before you get AIDS, your CD4 count generally goes down by about 80, 100 per year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the most rapidly moving thing. It does take some time. So if you have a very recent CD4 count that's very healthy, that's 1,000, for example, a few weeks ago, they're probably okay. Once it gets to be longer than a few months, you wonder whether or not you're really dealing with an accurate number, and you probably have to assume the worst.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time for a little emphasis. And let me just state up front, I am about the same age as Stuart, a couple of years older. I was in medical school in 1983 when this broke in Australia, and we didn't know what was going on. It's been amazing to follow this story from what is this disorder that's killing these young, healthy men, to killing lots of people, to devastating huge parts of Africa. And then getting to the point now where we actually believe that we've had some cures, that high-grade antiretroviral therapy given early and given for a number of years may have actually resulted in cure, a complete loss of the virus in a few specific patients. So it's been a terrible story. I've had a number of friends die, and early in my career, when I first came to the States in the early 90s, there wasn't a shift that went by where I didn't diagnose a new case of AIDS in a patient. At least one, often three or four. Terrible disease that maybe at least if you've got money and drugs, we can get a handle on. So HIV positive means you've been infected with the virus. AIDS is you've got the disease in its full form, that you've got the infections or you've dropped your particularly CD4 count to the point where you're at extremely high risk. We know the high risk groups, and we know that the primary infection is a flu-like illness, and sometimes we have to put those two together because it's so easy to miss that primary infection because it's so nonspecific. So you send a test, but the problem is the test don't become positive, the usual tests that we do, for 3 to 8 weeks. So there's this period where you can have the infection, you can be spreading the infection, but we don't know you're positive yet. And we want to diagnose it as early as possible because we believe that treatment can significantly reduce the spread of the disease, and it may also affect that long-term prognosis. And remember one number, CD4 count less than 200. If your CD4 count less than 200, you're very immune suppressed. And there's actually a quick and dirty way we used to back in the day estimate your CD4 count is by the total lymphocyte count. If your total lymphocyte count on your CBC is less than 1,000, then that's a reasonable predictor of a CD4 count less than 200. It's not perfect by any means, but if you can't get CD4 count back, you know somebody's HIV positive and you have a really low lymphocyte count, then that suggests that they're at very high risk for all of the disorders that we're about to talk about.
Peer review.
Because HIV and AIDS really benefits from the help of a specialist, we actually reached out to Dr. Kathleen Jacobson, who is an associate professor of family medicine at USC Keck School of Medicine, and she's also done a fellowship in HIV medicine. She was able to peer review this episode for us and also provide us with a little bit more information that may be helpful. So at the end of some of these chapters, I'm going to chime in with a little bit extra information from Dr. Jacobson. So here's some of the added information from Dr. Jacobson. If you run that P24 antigen test, so it's not available to everyone, but if you have that test, that one actually turns positive as soon as 10 days after infection. So it's 10 to 21 days after infection, that test could turn positive, and that's based off of the viral load reaching about 10,000. If you run an antibody test, that's going to take 4 to 6 weeks before it's positive. So if you've got that P24 antigen and you're suspicious of a new HIV infection, that one's going to hopefully catch it a bit earlier.